Chapter 18. Signor Speranza pushes his luck. Ivano Maestro took his job as head of the security detail very seriously after that. No one other than the security team members were permitted on the property, save Signor Speranza, Betta, and Smilzo, who were all issued special clearance badges, which had to be presented each time they arrived at or departed from the premises.
"I do not understand," Signor Speranza had said. "Why I need a badge in the first place? You know who I am. I've known you since you were a baby."
Ivano shook his head. "I am sorry, signore. It's protocol. As soon as one abandons protocol, one allows things to devolve into chaos." Yes, Signor Speranza thought, frowning at the sky. He himself had abandoned God's protocol for truthfulness, and look how things were turning out. He had a cardboard cutout booked into the second floor of his hotel, and he needed to display a security badge to make a trip to the mailbox. That was what violating protocol had got him. Gemma and Carlotta were still staying with Sio Franco, and calling at all hours to check on Nonno Guido and Bambolina, and Smilzo was now a regular fixture at the hotel in their place. It was his job to turn the lights in the green room on and off at various intervals, and to occasionally whisk past the curtain so that the Maestro brothers, watching avidly down below, would perceive occasional signs of life. On the second day, in the interests of verisimilitude, Signor Speranza placed an order for an enormous expensive lunch from a nearby town under the name Di Rinaldi. It arrived via courier, and was subjected to Ivano's rigorous inspection.
"Maybe poison, signore," he said, holding out his arm to prevent Signor Speranza bringing the food into the house straight away.
A sheaf of spoons was fetched, and Ivano sampled each dish, while Signor Speranza gazed up at the blue sky and beseeched Saints Gervase and Protase, patron saints of high blood pressure, to prevent the Maestro brothers from driving his so high that the last thing he ever did was to watch Ivano Maestro shift a mouthful of broccoli rabe with hot peppers and slivered almonds from one side of his mouth to the other. Once Ivano had waited 15 minutes and still hadn't died, he released the bag of now cold food from confiscation, and Signor Speranza, Betta, and Smilzo ate it at the kitchen table and discussed what to do next.
"The cameo with the cardboard cutout is not going to work anymore," Signor Speranza pronounced, twirling his poison-free spaghetti bolognese on a fork. "Everyone has seen the Polaroid with Smilzo."
"I think you're right," said Betta. "Besides, when everyone thinks he's here at the hotel for days on end, how do we explain that he only had time to glide by in the background? I don't think people will accept that."
She glanced towards the front door and shuddered.
"I don't think Signor Maestro will accept that."
Signor Speranza sighed. Dante Rinaldi's sudden supposed arrival had thrown quite a spanner into his plan to deal with Signor Maestro via a well-timed forged letter. Now Signor Speranza was like a farmer in one of the old stories with a wolf at his door.
"I think I might have something, boss," said Smilzo. "You know, I have been watching a lot of films upstairs."
Signor Speranza nodded. Smilzo had been so bored just sitting in the green room all day, turning the lights on and off and rustling the curtains, that Betta had suggested moving the TV and DVD player from their bedroom for him to watch.
"So," Smilzo continued, "I was watching the Dante Rinaldi movie you have yesterday, and—"
Signor Speranza interrupted.
"Why would you watch that idiot's movie?"
Smilzo lifted his eyebrows.
"It's called hate-watching, boss."
Signor Speranza considered, recalling the time he and Betta had tried watching it also. He waved his hand.
"Continue." "I was thinking—"
Smilzo hesitated.
"What if we don't need Dante's face? What if all we need is his voice?"
Signor Speranza frowned.
"What does that mean?"
Smilzo explained that he could copy the audio from Dante's earlier movie and splice it into their own.
"We'll be simple, boss,"
he said, his enthusiasm growing as he described the plan and helped himself to salad, dropping half of it on the table.
"I can cut words and phrases together. He can be our narrator." "A narrator?"
Signor Speranza muttered, thinking it over.
"I have all the equipment I need, boss," said Smilzo.
I can start working on the sound files today.
Signor Speranza caught Better's eye across the table and shrugged.
Signor Maestro might not like that, he said.
Better crossed her arms, her eyes flashing.
Well, he's going to have to.
Smilzo spent the rest of that day and night working on the audio, and the next day he and Signor Speranza were obliged to leave the house to go to the shop. There was one final scene to shoot, in which Smilzo's character proposed marriage to Antonella's character as Ernesto serenaded them with a guitar. Signor Speranza felt an overwhelming sense of foreboding as he departed the property.
"Don't go out, and don't let anyone in, and don't talk to those idiots," he told Betta as he was leaving. "Everything is locked up tight, signore," said Ivano, with a jaunty salute,
and indeed it seemed to be. Signor Speranza's eye roved over the bleak environs of the hotel, dotted as it was with uniformed maestros. The brothers had worked out a schedule, 7 on and 7 off, 24 hours a day.
"This is what I have done," Signor Speranza thought grimly. "These are the consequences of my actions. A cavalcade of maestros."
He glanced at the sky.
"I hope you are happy now."
He and Smilzo flashed their badges at Ivano, and they waved goodbye to the troops. Once at the shop, and with the door safely locked behind him, Signor Speranza was supposed to be thinking about two things: the final scene for the movie, and the €16,225 deficit for the pipes, which was due in 17 days, and of which he had not thought once in almost 72 hours.
Too much. This fake Dante Rinaldi situation was too much. There was no room to think. There was not even room to breathe.
Signor Speranza fidgeted with the compendium and glanced out of the window. He could see Don Rocco, the great doubting Thomas, across the way, waiting for the rosary circle to arrive. And, oh great, there was Signor Maestro. He was pacing up and down in front of the butcher's shop and glaring into the distance in the direction of the hotel. Now, as Signor Speranza watched, he crossed the street and came right up to the window of Speranza and Sons, cupping his hands around his face and placing his forehead on the glass. He banged on the window with his fist.
"Speranza, I want to talk to you."
Ernesto, who was tuning his guitar, glanced up at Signor Speranza and cringed.
"I'm sorry, signore," he said, ducking out of his guitar strap. "Let me take care of it."
He unlocked the front door and poked his head out.
"Papa, please, you have to be quiet now. It's time for my song."
Signor Maestro threw his hands in the air and gurgled, his face a peculiar shade of purple, but he stormed back across the street.
"A flying chicken cutlet,"
Signor Speranza muttered, flicking through the compendium again.
"Do you see what I am dealing with, Lord? A man who is angry because he wants to fly an animated chicken cutlet into a famous film star's mouth."
He glanced up at the ceiling.
"And you made this man. You are the one."
Signor Speranza did not often take his heavenly father to task, but there was such a thing as quality control. Gemma arrived at 9 o'clock to do the make-up, and Ernesto let her in.
"Hello, handsome,"
she said, and stood on her tiptoes to give him a kiss. Signor Speranza, watching from his desk, rolled his eyes.
Carlotta dashed in around her mother's legs, talking 19 to the dozen.
"Ernesto," she shouted, "look at what my mother got me from Signor Bisi's store. It's a yo-yo. I know how to do a trick."
She stuck her finger in the loop of string at the top of the yo-yo and swung it around in a wild circle, nearly whapping Ernesto in the face with it.
"Wow, that's very cool," said Ernesto. "Here, let me show you something."
He took the yo-yo, wound it up, and then let it go. He flicked his wrist, giving the string a little bounce, and the yo-yo rolled gently forward on the floor like a dog on a leash.
Carlotta's face lit up. "You are going to teach me that," she announced.
Signor Speranza cleared his throat, and Gemma looked up.
"Oh, hi, Papa,"
she called. Then she bent down and whispered to Carlotta, who looked up also and waved.
"Hi, Nonno."
Signor Speranza waved back and grumbled under his breath.
Who needed grandpas anymore when there were Ernestos wandering around with angel voices and a waiting repertoire of yo-yo tricks? I am like Bambolina now, he thought. Old, forgotten, yesterday's news. Any day now he might be expected to be lying on a lawn somewhere, helpless and swarmed by schnauzers. The morning wore on. It took longer than usual to get things going, because Antonella had to keep stopping every 30 seconds to refresh her phone, which had survived its tumble on the boulders with only a few dings and scratches. "I'm sure Dante is going to post something soon about arriving in Prometo," she fretted, her brow furrowing each time there was no news. "I don't want to miss it." She turned to Smilzo. "Did you get to talk to him yet? Has he said anything about me?" Smilzo's eyes flickered. I have not talked to him," he mumbled, glancing at Signor Speranza. He stays in his room." Signor Speranza took out the megaphone after that and got everyone to focus. It was just after 1 o'clock that the emergency struck. Smilzo was wrapping up his proposal for the 10th time. Antonella was dosing her eyes yet again with Visine tears, and Ernesto's serenata was swelling to its decimo crescendo, when Signor Speranza happened to glance up at the window and perceive Signor Maestro storm out the front of his shop, throw off his apron, swing his fist at Speranza and Sons, and leave, most definitely pointed, in the direction of the hotel. "Scostumato!" Signor Speranza gasped, and without even yelling cut, he ran right through the scene in progress to get to the front door. "What's happening, boss?" squeaked Smilzo, but Signor Speranza was already gone. He raced down Via Sant'Agata, and then plunged left, down the little travelled shortcut that he had used to take years ago when he was a boy going to see Betta at her parents' hotel. He waded calf-deep in yellow licorice plants. Had there been this many of them when he was young? He didn't remember it being this difficult to get through. He arrived just before Signor Maestro, dishevelled and with a sprig of licorice somehow stuck in his hair and his moustache askew. "Signore," said Ivano, blocking the way with the angle of his substantial person, "I was not expecting you. Do you have your badge?" Signor Speranza, who was gasping for breath, opened his mouth and closed it like a fish. In another second his advantage was lost, as Signor Maestro careened onto the scene, followed by Smilzo, Antonella, Ernesto, Gemma, and Carlotta. "What is going on here?" asked Ivano, tapping his earpiece and then spreading his arms out. "I live here!" Signor Speranza roared. "Not so fast, Speranza!" bellowed Signor Maestro, pushing his way towards Signor Speranza and standing directly in front of him, nose to nose. "The jig is up!" Signor Speranza looked sidelong at Ivano. "A little help here," he said. "He does not have a badge." But Ivano took one look at his father and turned red to the tips of his ears. "Sorry, signore," he mumbled. Signor Speranza rolled his eyes, but he did not have time for praying. "You listen here, Speranza." Signor Maestro poked his finger in Signor Speranza's chest. "My boys have been here for 3 days, 72 hours. I know you don't have air conditioning in this damp, and that window—" Here Signor Maestro swung his enormous paw, pointing towards the green room on the second floor. "Has not been open one crack, and do you know why?" Signor Speranza squirmed. "Some guests enjoy a balmy temperature, signore," he began, but Signor Maestro cut him off. "I'll tell you why. Because he is not in there. That is what I think. He is not in there, but you are telling us all that he is." A bank of silence met this proclamation. When Signor Speranza regained the ability to speak, his voice was shaking. "Signore, I'm sorry you feel that way. If I could prove it to you—" "Yes." Signor Maestro crossed his arms. "Yes, so you can prove it to me. I want a meeting with Dante Rinaldi tonight." Signor Speranza shrugged, helpless. "I can ask him, signore, but—" "No!" Signor Maestro shook his head. "None of this go-between. For 68,000 euros I will ask him myself." He rolled up his sleeves. "Now!" He shifted Ivano to one side and marched towards the hotel. "Signore!" yelped Signor Speranza, scurrying after him.
Everyone followed then, because protocol had just gone to hell and security badges had lost all meaning. Only Smiltzo broke off from the group.
"Don't worry, boss," he whispered as he slipped away, his mobile pressed to his ear. "I have an idea."
Signor Maestro did not go to the door. Instead, he bent over and retrieved a handful of pebbles from the ground. Straightening, he threw them like scattershot at the green room's window. Nothing happened. Signor Speranza could hear his heart pounding in his ears. Signor Maestro put his hands on his hips.
"Signor Rinaldi," he called, "you think you are a big shot. Well, maybe I am a big shot, too."
There was no answer, only the distant chatter of birds in the trees.
"Knock, knock," Signor Maestro tried again. "Who is there?"
This time, there was a rustling behind the curtains. Antonella cried out. But Signor Speranza waved for her to hush. "It's just the wife," muttered Signor Maestro, crossing his arms and throwing Signor Speranza a contemptuous glance. Slowly the window opened, perhaps 15 centimetres, and a white handkerchief was bobbed up and down from a hand barely visible. Signor Speranza rolled his eyes. Was this Smilzo's big idea? Signor Maestro snorted, but he made his voice pleasant now, wheedling, just in case he was wrong.
"Allow me to introduce myself, Signor Rinaldi. I am Antonio Maestro, a very successful butcher and the financial backer of your new project."
There was silence for a moment, and then, crisp and clipped, "Ciao."
Antonella gasped. "That's him," she said. "I know Dante Rinaldi's voice. That is him."
There was a stir of excitement amongst the Maestro brothers, and Carlotta squeaked and jumped up and down.
"I told you so, Papa,"
said Ivano, grinning and adjusting his earpiece.
"I told you he was really here."
Signor Maestro looked like a man who had just had the wind properly knocked out of his sails, and Signor Speranza thoroughly enjoyed it. But Signor Maestro recovered his wits. He gripped his thick paws together and scampered closer.
"Please, Signor Rinaldi, I have a business proposition I would like to discuss with you. Would be very lucrative if you can meet in person."
Signor Maestro let the question dwindle, half spoken. Signor Speranza held his breath. There was a pause. It was rather a longer pause than one might expect to occur in normal conversation, but he had to hope that Signor Maestro imagined it was his own feelings of anticipation that lengthened the seconds.
"Sure," said Dante finally in a lazy, absent drawl. "I will meet you at the café at 8.
The window snapped shut then, signalling the end of the conversation, and the Maestros sent up a collective whoop of celebration. Smiltzo slid back into the picture.
"Pretty good, eh, boss?" he whispered, grinning.
Signor Speranza, who had just found himself suddenly robbed of the will to live, did the only thing he could do under the circumstances, which was to reach up and smack his assistant on the back of the head. Chapter 19 Incognito. Signor Speranza, Betta, and Smilzo gathered in the green room to reckon with the aftermath of what had just transpired.
"Smilzo did the best he could,"
Betta maintained. It was she who had been his accomplice on the inside. She had run up the stairs from the kitchen when he called her, racing to power up the laptop onto which he had copied and categorized all the sound clips he'd ripped from the DVD of Dante's movie. The handkerchief had been a stalling tactic, improvised on the spot when the sound program had failed to load.
"He was very clever. I could not have done it without him," she continued, smiling encouragement at Smilzo. "He knew by heart exactly which number went with which recording."
Signor Speranza grunted, crossing his arms and glaring at his assistant.
"So it was premeditated, then,"
he said acidly, and Smilzo's face, which had brightened at Betta's lavish praise, dissolved again into abject misery.
"I'm sorry, boss," Smilzo said for the 100th time. I didn't think things through."
Betta snorted. "Please, Smilzo,
Your boss never thinks things through. He is the patron saint of not thinking things through. Stop apologizing. Let's all think what to do next.
They discussed their options in hushed voices, the clock on the night table ticking ever closer to 8 o'clock, and the looming spectre of the newly invigorated Maestro Brothers Security Squad Limited just outside the window, a grim reminder of what was at stake.
"We have to cancel," Signor Speranza said, throwing his hands up. "That's it. I don't see any other way."
Beta winced.
"I don't know, Nino. You couldn't see Signor Maestro's face from where you were standing." She shivered. "I wouldn't like to be the one to tell him he's not getting his meeting. It would be like trying to tell a wolf I'm going to take back its dinner."
Signor Speranza frowned, recalling that he had thought of Signor Maestro as a wolf only yesterday. The three of them all lay back on the bed and stared at the ceiling, thinking it over.
"What about a phone call?" said Beta. "We could use the sound clips again."
Smilzo shook his head.
"I don't know, Signora. I have not finished scrubbing most of the clips yet. They still have background noise. Music would sound very strange, I think."
"Probably you don't have any sound clips of Dante saying flying chicken cutlet either," pointed out Signor Speranza.
They went round and round in circles until finally inspiration struck. Signor Speranza sat up. He knew exactly what they were going to do. He laid out the plan in meticulous detail, garnering Smilzo's instant and enthusiastic support and a reluctant vote of confidence from his wife.
"All right, Nino, I'll help you," she said, a worried crease in the middle of her forehead. "But I told you before, and I'll tell you again. If this goes bust and they want to take you to jail, I know nothing."
For Signor Speranza, the relentless march of time had brought with it many indignities. First there had been the slow slide into long-sightedness, followed by a newfound aversion to spicy food. The last decade had seen an embarrassing reliance on fibre drinks and supplements. Recently, and to his great surprise, given his family history, there had even come a lamentable but as yet scarcely detectable thinning around the crown of his magnificent helmet of hair. But through all of this, one thing had remained sacred.
"No," Signor Speranza stuck his lip out, "I am not shaving it. And if that means Antonio Maestro murders me in cold blood, then so be it."
Beta rolled her eyes.
"Nino, will you stay still and try not to be so dramatic? Maybe there's a way to cover it up or something."
She wielded the tiny silver moustache comb, combing her husband's moustache this way and that, and finally giving it up in despair.
"You'll just have to zip the jacket up to your nose."
Logistically speaking, this would not be a problem. The enormous velour tracksuit Signor Speranza was wearing would more than accommodate such an arrangement. Burgundy velour up to his nose, or even better, past it, and a pair of aviator sunglasses, and his identity would be fully hidden. Beta covered the grey in his hair with black shoe polish. Smilzo called ahead to the café and booked the table with Signor Catuzza for 8 o'clock, letting her know that Signor Maestro could be expected to arrive first.
"But I wonder, Signora," he said, "if you would mind turning off the fairy lights on the trees outside the restaurant. Is just that Signor Rinaldi prefers to be inconspicuous and—"
Signor Catuzza interrupted, her voice crackling over the receiver.
"I understand completely, Smilzo. I have experience catering to elite clientele."
"Who do you think she meant, boss?" asked Smilzo, bewildered as he hung up the phone.
"Maybe it's Don Rocco."
It was tricky working out what to do with the Maestro brothers. When Signor Speranza got the idea, it was so like a flash of divine inspiration that he made the sign of the cross. On a slip of paper, he wrote the names of the brothers who were part of the security squad in two columns, pairing them off. One pair was to clear the square by the café, the rest of them were to act as decoys.
"This is a very popular technique with the American CIA," Signor Speranza told them. "It's cutting edge."
One brother in each pair was to dress in his security uniform, while the other was to disguise himself as Dante, by which arrangement they would deflect and confuse anyone wishing to lay harm to the real Dante. That none of the brothers was assigned to the real Dante was a fact which was easily concealed via the declaration of a solemn oath that no one was to reveal whether he was guarding the genuine article or a copy. Every single brother on the squad was dazzled by the sheer brilliance of this plan, and only one unanimous question emerged. What did Dante Rinaldi wear? Signor Speranza was well prepared for this. I know in films you see him always with the tank top, he said deviously. But in his downtime, when he is not filming, he prefers a velour tracksuit. At 7:45 p.m., Signor Speranza and Smilzo watched from the second-floor window as the decoy maestro pairs fanned out from the hotel grounds like seven khaki and velour vectors into the night. They themselves would not leave until it was actually 8 o'clock, so as to ensure Signor Maestro's arrival at the café first. "Well, that's done," said Signor Speranza, relieved after they had gone. He was wearing the tracksuit, which was zipped to the bridge of his nose, plus the aviators. Now he stood alongside the cardboard cutout of Dante Rinaldi and struck a pose. "How do I look?" Smilzo looked, his eyes darting back and forth.
"I don't know, boss," he said slowly.
Signor Speranza threw up his hands.
"Of course we will not look exactly the same,"
he said, impatient, his voice muffled inside the jacket.
"What do you think? He's a piece of paper."
Smilzo hesitated.
"Yes, boss, that is one of the differences,"
he considered some more.
"Are you sure you do not have a tank top?"
Signor Speranza frowned.
"Why? Do you think that would make it more convincing?"
Smilzo's ears turned pink.
"On second thoughts, boss, maybe the tracksuit is a better idea. It covers up that there is more of you than there is of Dante."
Before Signor Speranza could post a rejoinder to this remark, there was a noise at the window. Then a voice called softly,
"Hello? Hello, are you there?"
Smilzo peeked out the side of the curtain and gasped.
"Is Antonella, boss? She must have seen there was a light and no guard."
Signor Speranza rolled his eyes and made a shooing gesture with his hands.
"Make her get out of here. We have to go."
Smilzo clamped his mouth shut and shook his head.
No, boss," he said. "I don't want to."
Signor Speranza groaned. He unzipped his jacket, flung the aviators on the bed, and threw open the window, sending Smilzo skittering into the corner.
"Signorina," he called, agitated. "What are you doing here?"
Antonella tipped her head back and squinted up at Signor Speranza, scrunching her nose.
"Did you dye your hair, signore?" she asked.
Signor Speranza gazed up at the night sky, at the vast lake of stars, and asked God if there weren't any other way he could get his kicks than this.
"Is there something you needed, signorina? I'm very busy."
Antonella stood on tiptoe, craning her head and looking wistfully over Signor Speranza's shoulder. She looked very like her younger self just then, 10-year-old Antonella, with her gawky knees and elbows and her wobbly chin and the constant look of anxiety.
"I guess that Dante isn't here, signore," she said, despondent. "I know he has the meeting with Signor Maestro, but I saw the light and thought..."
"That's right. He's not here,"
said Signor Speranza, glancing behind him at the clock on the wall. 7:58. 2 minutes. They needed to get going.
"Did he say anything, though?"
Antonella was looking hopeful again.
"Has he watched any of my scenes yet? Does he think they're good?"
Signor Speranza did not have the opportunity to reply. Suddenly Smilzo was at his elbow, and then he was jockeying past him and leaning over the windowsill.
"I talked to him, Nella,"
he said, using her nickname from when they were at school together.
"He said you are..."
He broke off, scanning the sky, as if expecting to see the word written there.
"Amazing. He said you are amazing."
Antonella gasped and scurried a little closer.
"Did he, Smilzo? Did he really say that?"
Smilzo nodded.
"He did. He said he was impressed that you never acted before. He said lots of professional actresses would be jealous."
"Jealous?"
Antonella squealed. "Smilzo, you're lying now," she said, swatting her hand at the idea, but she was grinning from ear to ear.
Signor Speranza spent the next 59 seconds by the clock, listening to Smilzo enumerate to Antonella the manifest virtues of her acting abilities, as had been supposedly relayed to him by Dante Rinaldi, internationally renowned film star turned cardboard cutout. There was her grace, her poise, her diction, her attention to detail, her impeccable comedic timing, the particular way in which she had delivered a line in Act 2, Scene 3, the one right after the guy in the bar told her he liked her dress, and... Signor Speranza had a sudden vision of himself in a doctor's office having his blood pressure taken. "My, my," said the doctor, squeezing the inflation bulb and peering over his half-moon spectacles at the needle gauge. "You will want to be careful, signore, or your head will explode." And right as he said it, that was precisely what happened. Boom! "Smilzo!" Signor Speranza cried. "Wrap it up!" Smilzo halted his recitation of Antonella's flawless line delivery and glanced back at his employer. "Sorry, boss," he said, his cheeks pinkening. He turned back to Antonella. "I have to go now," he said sheepishly. Then, with an impulsive gulp, he blurted, "He also said you are very pretty." Signor Speranza had happened to glance over Smilzo's shoulder just then, as he uttered the word pretty, and so he was able to catch the expression of undiluted astonishment that flashed across Antonella's long, thin face. It gave him an unexpected pang. Hadn't anyone ever told her that before? There wasn't any need to shoo Antonella off the property after that. She went of her own accord, hands clasped and whispering as if she were in church. "Thank you, Smilzo," she said, awe-stricken. "Thank you for telling me that." Signor Speranza and his assistant watched her go from the window until she was out of sight, Smilzo beaming. "I am happy I finally said all of that, boss," he said. "I have been wanting to for a long time." They arrived within sight of the dimly lit cafe, approaching via the untravelled licorice patch. Smilzo was sulking, because he had realised on the way over that his little speech had probably made Antonella like Dante even more. Signor Speranza was ignoring him. He held back, scanning the darkness, and spotted Signor Maestro seated already at the table Smilzo had stipulated over the phone. Signora Cattuzza was there also in high heels and a beaded flamenco skirt. Signor Speranza caught at Smilzo's arm.
"You are ready, right?" he asked urgently. "You know what to do."
Now that the moment was upon them, his own heart was fluttering in his chest like a bird. Smilzo shrugged.
"Sure, boss."
Signor Speranza stiffened. This kind of listless attitude was not going to cut it.
"Listen to me."
He stopped walking and took Smilzo by the shoulders.
"This Dante stuff is nonsense. It is only nonsense. Antonella is never going to meet him. He's make-believe, you understand? It was your words that made Antonella happy. Yours, Smilzo. And when all this is over, I will help you win her back. Va bene?"
Smilzo perked up.
"You will help me, boss?" he asked. "You will really do that?"
Signor Speranza straightened up.
"I will do that, Smilzo. You have my word of honour."
He glanced at the cafe, then put on his sunglasses.
"Now, let's do this right, or that maniac over there is going to turn me into Filetto di Speranza. If you want me to be able to help you, you need me whole and functioning."
Signor Maestro stood up as they approached, leaning forward to shake hands, but Smilzo was ready.
"I am so sorry, signore, but Signor Rinaldi prefers not to shake hands."
At this cue, Signor Speranza made his hands into a steeple and gave a gentle bow, which evidently impressed Signor Maestro.
"I have seen that in films," he muttered, almost giddy as he retook his seat.
Smilzo shuffled around the chairs. His own he placed closest to Signor Maestro, and Signor Speranza's he shunted back slightly into the inky shadows of the olive tree.
"Nothing for me, signora,"
he said to Signora Cattuzza when she approached for the orders. She glanced hopeful at her most esteemed guest,
But Smilso intervened again. Nothing for Signor Rinaldi either. He is on a very strict Hollywood diet. To Signor Maestro he added, "That is also why he looks spulkier than you may have expected, Signore. He is wearing 10 layers of sweatsuit. Is an old Hollywood weight loss technique."
"Ah," said Signor Maestro.
Signor Speranza, who had been unprepared for this ad-libbed line, nearly choked. 10 layers of sweatsuit. 10? But Smilso was already forging ahead, just as they had rehearsed. Quick and painless, that was what they had decided on. Get out of there as fast as possible.
"I have told Signor Rinaldi all about your very successful business, Signore," Smilso began smoothly. "He was very interested to hear of your wide range of products. He is a big supporter of meat, you know. Cutlet, pork chop, any kind of meatball."
Signor Speranza, who could scarcely see anything through his tinted lenses, could as yet discern Signor Maestro's eager, greedy face.
"He is so sure," he thought contemptuously. "He is so sure everything is going to go the way he wants it to go."
Well, if there was anyone who could say no to Signor Maestro, it was a film star. Signor Maestro scooched his chair closer. He strained to peer at the shadowy occupant of the chair next to the olive tree.
"I am so happy to hear you say that, Signore," he said. "I am a fan of you, and you are a fan of me. That's a very good start."
Signor Speranza rolled his eyes behind his glasses. "Dante Rinaldi, number one fan of Signor Maestro's butcher's shop.
Are you seeing this, Papa?"
he asked, checking in with his father, who was sitting at the back of his mind on the upturned bucket and had keeled over, laughing. Signor Maestro scooched his chair again, putting distance between himself and Smilso.
"I have a big idea for a television commercial," Signor Maestro continued, edging closer to Signor Speranza with each word. "Big idea, big. Would be a big deal for me and a big deal for you too."
"About that," said Smilso, poking his pointy nose in, "I have spoken to Signor Rinaldi about this commercial of yours already, Signore, and I am afraid—"
"No offense,"
Signor Maestro snapped, swiveling his ponderous head to glare at Smilso. "But this is business, real business, no playtime here. It's time for you to get lost." He turned back towards the olive tree then, as if everything was taken care of.
"He is not used to anyone telling him no," thought Signor Speranza, smirking behind his thick layer of velour. This was amazing.
He had wished he'd thought to get it on video. Signor Maestro, the big, dumb dope, who was so gullible that he could believe a 62-year-old man he had known his entire life was a 25-year-old film star in a tracksuit. Smilso insinuated himself again, just as they had practiced.
"Signor Rinaldi has asked me to act as his spokesperson this evening, Signore," he said briskly, extracting from his inside jacket pocket a folded letter and pushing it across the table towards Signor Maestro. "He is not currently able to speak for himself. His acting coach has put him on a complete vocal rest for at least 3 days.
Signor Maestro's forehead rumpled.
"Vocal rest," he grunted, suspicious.
"Si, signore," Smilso bobbed his head.
"An actor's voice is his instrument, you know."
Signor Maestro looked from Smilso on his right to the velour-covered monument on his left, digesting what he had just heard. His mouth puckered.
"I heard him talk this afternoon," he burst out. "He sounded fine to me."
Smilso gave him an indulgent smile.
"That is because you have an untrained ear, signore," he said, tugging cheerily on his own earlobe for emphasis.
Signor Speranza had to pinch himself to stop from giggling when Signor Maestro's mouth dropped open. If it had ever occurred to him to think that it might be possible to turn Antonio Maestro into a laughingstock simply by going undercover as Dante Rinaldi, he would have done it years ago.
"Then you will have him read the letter, Smilso,"
Signor Speranza had instructed his assistant when they were planning the stunt. The letter, which had been designed with a professional-looking letterhead from a fictional law firm in Rome — Signor Maestro wouldn't know what an agent was, but he would understand lawyers — stated verbosely but unequivocally, even for a butcher of very little brain, that Dante Rinaldi could not and would not be appearing in any butchery commercials in this life or the next, forever and ever, amen. We will be perfectly polite, gracious, Signor Speranza had continued. You will shake his hand, I will bow, and then we will go. That wasn't what happened.
Signor Maestro fumbled with the paper, unfolding it and squinting in the darkness. Smilzo attempted to cast a light on it with his phone, but Signor Maestro swatted him away, producing instead a cigarette lighter. He hunched over his letter, his lips moving as he read by the flickering flame.
2 minutes, thought Signor Speranza happily. I will be out of here in 2 minutes, and in another 20 I will be out of this ridiculous costume and getting into bed.
He was wrong on both counts. For a start, he had at that moment only 30 seconds to go until his rapid evacuation from the café. Signor Maestro came to the end of the letter. Signor Speranza knew this because he could read his lips.
Cordially, the legal representatives of Dante Rinaldi.
That had been Smilzo's idea, cordially. He saw the dawning look of stupefaction. Signor Maestro turned the paper over, as if perhaps it might say it was all a joke on the other side. Signor Speranza gave Smilzo the signal, which was to lean forward in his chair and tap the side of his glasses. Smilzo stood up. Signor Speranza stood up also.
"Thank you so much for meeting with us, signore," said Smilzo, pleasant, to the end. "On behalf of Dante Rinaldi, I would just like to say—"
But Signor Maestro had scrambled out of his chair. He looked almost to be scrambling over the table.
"Signor Rinaldi," he said, "Signor Rinaldi, if I could just have a word—"
He had the lighter in his hand still alight, and his frantic movements caused the little flame to jerk this way and that like a drunken firefly. In a second he was upon Signor Speranza and tugging at his velour sleeve.
"Signor Rinaldi!"
Signor Speranza would remember what happened next until the day he died. Signor Maestro, small-town Italian butcher and lately unwitting major investor in a fraudulent motion picture project, lunged forward. Signor Speranza, 62-year-old vacuum cleaner repairman ludicrously disguised in a burgundy velour tracksuit as a 20-something tank-top-wearing film star, stumbled. His glasses fell to the ground, his moustache popped over the top of his jacket. Signor Maestro's eyes widened.
"Speranza!"
Signor Speranza did the only thing his frantic brain could think to do. Pow! Right in the mouth. St. Agata's rectory had two doorbells. One was electric and had been installed in 1956. The other, older one, was an actual bell on a string. Rather than take it down, the priest at the time had rechristened it the confessional bell. Any poor and wretched sinner could ring that bell at any hour of the night in quest of immediate absolution.
"Father!"
Signor Speranza bellowed, clanging the bell over and over again.
"Are you trying to kill me? Who goes to sleep at 8:30?
2 minutes later he knelt in the confessional.
"Bless me, Father, for I have sinned."
It was dark on his side of the confessional box, but he could still make out Don Rocco in his lighted compartment on the other side, his face pixelated through the privacy screen.
"If Signor Maestro finds me, this will be my last confession."
There was a long pause. Signor Speranza squinted through the screen.
"Are you praying now, Father? It has been a while since I have been here. Maybe they have changed the rules?"
Don Rocco sighed.
"Would you like to tell me what is going on, signore?" he asked. "You look like Santa Claus in Lake Como in that tracksuit."
Despite his mortal peril, Signor Speranza's moustache bristled.
"It's a perfectly serviceable tracksuit, Father," he said coldly.
Don Rocco displayed the appropriate amount of sheepishness. "Please, signore," he said, "what's bothering you?" The whole story came out, the same as it had to Smilzo: the pipes, the money, the visit to Alberto and his Alfa Romeo, George Clooney, Dante Rinaldi. The lies, lies, and more lies. Finally he showed him the hand he had used to punch Signor Maestro in the mouth. Don Rocco, who had been sitting quietly through all of this, his head inclined, could be quiet no longer.
"I knew it!"
he cried, jumping up from his chair on the other side of the screen.
"I knew you were up to something with this film business!"
Signor Speranza adopted an icy dignity, as he had before about the Santa Claus in Lake Como comment.
Do you really feel, Father, that your conduct befits the holy sacrament of reconciliation?
But Don Rocco was not in the least bit penitent.
Why did you not tell me about the trouble with the pipes? He asked. Maybe there was something I could have done to help.
Did you have 70,000 euros lying around, Father?
Don Rocco admitted that he had not.
Then you couldn't have helped, said Signor Speranza blandly.
You have to tell everyone, the priest said in that particular implacable way only a priest or a nun could muster, as if they spoke the very word of God. You have to tell everyone what you've done, lying to them. You must tell them tonight. I will not grant you absolution unless you promise you'll do that.
Signor Speranza considered. He considered all that had happened over the past 6 weeks. He thought about Smilzo and his screenplay. He thought about Antonella, leading woman. He thought about Ernesto singing the Ave Maria in the middle of that pokey little butcher's shop. He thought of Zio Franco and his magnificent amphitheatre. He thought of Betta and her cool-headed scheming and her T-shirts and earrings and water bottles. He thought about Gemma. Gemma smiling, Gemma laughing, Gemma coming alive again. Signor Speranza opened his mouth, ready to tell Don Rocco that he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't tell everyone, and Don Rocco could keep his absolution. But then it was as if a wind blew. It was as if, these past 3 days, all the numbers that had been crowding his head for the past month and a half had lain dormant, like fallen leaves, at the bottom of his brain, and now a wind blew and sent them all swirling again. 16,225 euros, 17 days. 16,225 euros, 17 days. It was too much. It was all too much. He lowered his head and sighed. I will do what you ask me to do, Father, he mumbled. But you must come with me. I don't think Signor Maestro will murder me while a priest is watching.
Signor Speranza and Don Rocco approached the hotel for Signor Speranza to get changed. Don Rocco had agreed that it was probably best if Signor Speranza did not confess to his various crimes and misdemeanors while still in the burgundy tracksuit. But as they approached the hotel grounds, for the second time in a week, Signor Speranza discerned a disturbance looming up ahead.
"Maybe they have come already with pitchforks," said Don Rocco cheerfully. "That will save us the trouble of assembling everyone."
Signor Speranza quickened his pace. They hurried down the road. They rounded the bend. Signor Speranza halted, taking in at a glance the throng of excited people. He glimpsed Signor Maestro, an ice pack clutched to his face, and his sons, half in khaki and half in velour. He saw Smilzo and Antonella. He saw a smattering of Trezzas, Bisis, and Zamprognas, as well as Signora Catuzza in her flamenco skirt. All five members of the Rosary Circle were there, clad in five flannel nightgowns. He saw Betta, Gemma, and Carlotta, and in the midst of them, wearing a canary yellow tank top and a lazy, dazzling grin, was Dante Rinaldi. Chapter 20. Don Rocco weighs in.
I should be suing you.
That was what Dante Rinaldi's agent, Camilla Gallo, said. She was a middle-aged woman from northern Italy, with aggressively blonde hair and shadowy roots, a professionally tailored suit, and a gravelly voice that matched the many, many voicemail messages Signor Speranza had received over the preceding weeks. She was sitting in Signor Speranza's accustomed seat at the kitchen table, and Signor Speranza and Smilzo, the former still in his velour tracksuit, slumped defeatedly opposite her. Her client had been borne off by a crowd of people to the café, and the scowling Signor Speranza could hear the distant din of celebration. Signora Gallo lit a cigarette, shaking out the match and tossing it onto Betta's polished walnut tabletop. She had already explained how she had found them. Antonella's posts had kept popping up in her feed with greater and greater frequency. She hadn't taken them seriously at first, until they had begun to include links to merchandise and behind-the-scenes clips from the set. Now she leant back in her chair and crossed her arms.
"Tell me about this film," she said.
Smilzo began, haltingly at first, and then with increasing animation as he realized she was actually listening. Signor Speranza rolled his eyes to the ceiling.
"A goat, huh?" That's pretty good.
Signora Gallo stubbed out her cigarette in the decorative pinch pot Carlotta had made at school.
Do you know where we can find this goat?
Smilso's brow furrowed.
Scusi, signora.
Signor Gallo lit another cigarette.
We will have to shoot the scene again, of course, with Dante. We do not have a lot of time.
As if confirming this, she glanced impatiently at her small gold wristwatch. Signor Speranza looked at Smilso. He looked at Signora Gallo.
You mean, he said, hesitating, Dante, Signor Rinaldi, wants to be in the film?
It was Signora Gallo's turn to roll her eyes.
Why else would I be here?
She waved to encompass the cramped kitchen and the entire world outside it, her nose wrinkling in disgust. Signor Speranza's moustache bristled.
It's true we are a small community, signora, he began.
Signora Gallo blew a cloud of smoke into his face.
You are a damp, she said flatly. But my client has got himself entangled with a married Swede, so he could use some good PR. He's public relations, boss,
Smilso whispered out the corner of his mouth.
Italian boy returns to his roots.
Signora Gallo swept out her hand as if visualizing a headline.
Makes homespun film in rinky-dink town.
She flicked more ash into the pinch pot and shrugged.
I think it'll work.
You know,
said Smilso timidly, forgetting for the moment that everything he'd learned over the past month and a half had been an elaborate lie,
boss knew Dante's father years ago, from the mines.
Signora Gallo frowned.
Fabio Rinaldi never worked in a mine. He is a plumber.
Signor Speranza gazed at the ceiling.
Of course.
It was a sleepless night. At midnight, Signor Speranza awakened to a sharp rap on his bedroom door and a crisp leaflet shoved under the crack. He read it, squinting in the moonlight and barking his shin on Bambolina's pungent playpen. Call time, it said in spindly letters, 9 o'clock sharp. The sharp was written in large print and underlined 3 times. Location, it went on, that place across from the butcher's shop.
That place across from the butcher's shop?
So agitated was Signor Speranza at having his father's store thus reduced that he could not fall back to sleep until well after 4 in the morning. Approximately 30 minutes after that, he was awakened again, this time being summoned to check Signora Gallo's cinematographer and lighting technician, each freshly arrived from Rome, into rooms on the 2nd floor.
Thank you, signore,
said the cinematographer, shifting his bulky equipment bag on his shoulder and appraising the little room.
That is, if this is all you have.
And he trailed off, glancing hopefully towards the hallway, as if the really fine accommodation was just an inquiry away. Since he was awake and too furious to go back to sleep, Signor Speranza arrived in the village square at 7, where he found Signora Catuzza manning the café window.
"What do you want?"
she asked, her arms crossed over her chest. Signor Speranza lifted his eyebrows.
"Good morning to you also. I think a sparkling water."
"No,"
snapped Signora Catuzza, her arms tightening and white dents appearing on either side of her nostrils.
"Those are reserved for Signor Gallo."
Signor Speranza eyed the copious rows of bottles and frowned, but decided it wasn't worth risking a snap from Signora Catuzza's dish tile.
"An espresso, then."
Signora Catuzza grunted and set about brewing the coffee, slamming the bag of grounds on the counter and clattering the cup and saucer.
"Oh, you have sparkling water,"
she muttered to herself in a high-pitched voice that sounded nothing like Signora Gallo, but which captured a certain mood.
"How remarkable! I wouldn't think you could get that here."
9 o'clock came and went. At 10:45, Signor Speranza, Smilso, Don Rocco, and the dentist Beppezzello were all sitting in chairs in front of the dental practice, staring across at the café, where Dante Rinaldi and a group of his friends, who had also checked into the hotel, were sitting.
"Maybe he does not have a watch,"
suggested Beppezzello.
"Maybe he does have a watch, but it is set to Roman time," said Smilso. "What time is it in Rome?"
Nobody said anything.
"Oh,"
said Smilso, his cheeks turning pink.
"Never mind, boss."
The door to the butcher's shop opened, and Signor Speranza flinched reflexively. He had not come face to face with the butcher since the unfortunate incident of the night before.
"Do not worry, signore," said Don Rocco, offering a staying hand. "He will not attack you. We had a long talk about an eye for an eye."
Don Rocco had not, in his conversation with Signor Maestro, specifically extended his reference to a tooth for a tooth, but it had hung there between them. Signor Speranza's blow to Signor Maestro's mouth had, as it turned out, been of sufficient force as to dislodge the latter's left central incisor from its socket.
"Real?" Beppe Zella told them, shaking his head with the awe of it. "Those beautiful teeth of his are real, after all. Unfortunately, I was unable to reattach it."
Signor Speranza winced. Even at this distance he could see the purplish swollen spot on Signor Maestro's face.
"What do you think he is doing?" asked Don Rocco curiously.
Signor Maestro was nudging his doorstopper into place with his toe. Then he went back inside, emerging moments later with a shallow cardboard box piled high with a selection of his products.
"Oh, no," murmured Smilzo, covering his eyes. "I can't watch."
Signor Maestro made a beeline for the table where Dante Rinaldi and his friends were sitting. Dante was draped lazily in his chair, one arm slung over the back, and obviously aware of the adoring attention he was getting from the surrounding tables full of girls. He did not shift his posture as Signor Maestro approached.
"What do you think he is saying, boss?" asked Smilzo, peeping through his fingers.
Dante and his friends gazed up at Signor Maestro, who was gesticulating in a grand fashion quite out of his usual character. One of the friends leaned over and picked half-heartedly through the box. Then Dante Rinaldi said something and flashed one of his grins, and Signor Maestro left, leaving his box behind him, and doing an odd ducking bow, twisting his apron in his hands. The occupants of the table watched him go, and when the door to the butcher's shop closed, they burst out laughing. Signor Speranza and Don Rocco exchanged glances, and Signor Speranza frowned. This Dante fellow had been considerably less trouble when he had been laser-printed onto corrugated fibreboard. Beppe Zella was frowning also.
"You know," he said, "this guy thinks he's hot stuff, but I can tell you right now, those are veneers."
At 11:30, Signora Gallo turned up with her requisite bottle of fizzy water and asked them why everyone was just sitting about. Signor Speranza said nothing, but only pointed across the square at her client, who was still sitting at the café table, but had progressed to unwrapping a packet of diced-cured pancetta from Signor Maestro's gift box and was taking turns with his friends pelting it piece by piece at a squirrel. They got down to business after that. Antonella was waiting inside Speranza and Sons, as she had been all morning since 8 o'clock. Her hair was painfully curled and sprayed, and as usual one of her plastic hoop earrings was stuck in it. She jumped out of her chair when they came in, sat down, and then stood back up again. This performance provoked laughter from Dante and his friends, and Antonella's cheeks burned. Signor Speranza briskly intervened.
"Signora Gallo," he said, addressing himself only to her, "I don't know if you have had the chance to meet our leading lady. This is Antonella Capra."
Antonella managed a watery smile.
Signora Gallo, holding her water bottle by the neck, pushed her way over. "Ciao, signora," said Antonella, bobbing an awkward curtsy.
Signora Gallo didn't answer. She was walking in a circle around Antonella, appraising her from all angles. She took a pencil from Signor Speranza's desk and poked it into Antonella's voluminous hair, studying it with a delicately wrinkled nose.
"Perfect,"
she finally pronounced, tossing the pencil in the vague direction of the wastepaper basket.
"She's perfect."
Antonella shimmered, and Signor Speranza let out a breath he hadn't realized he was holding. Signora Gallo clapped her hands.
"Dante," she called, "andiamo. Get to work so I can go home."
Signora Gallo's skeleton crew made quick work of Speranza and Sons. They pushed all the furniture against the walls and created a makeshift stage comprised of folding green screens and enormous lights on tripods.
"It's so they can make it look as though they are anywhere, boss," whispered Smilzo. "Anywhere but here."
Signor Speranza looked at his assistant and frowned. They were squashed behind his desk on a pair of folding chairs, their view of the soundstage partially obstructed by the spinning rack of replacement vacuum cleaner bags. Smilzer could not keep still. He had a copy of the shooting script with him, and he kept rolling it up and either peering through it as if it was a telescope or tapping it against one knee. His eyes, Signor Speranza noticed, kept wandering to the corner near the bathroom, where Dante and Antonella were standing a meter apart. They were not speaking to each other, so far as Signor Speranza could tell. Dante seemed absorbed in the contents of his phone, and Antonella was standing with an unnaturally straight and rigid posture. Who knew she could be so quiet? Signor Speranza marvelled. Every time Smilzo's gaze drifted in that direction, he would give a small, almost imperceptible jump and look away, blinking rapidly.
"Yes, I'm here now," said Signora Gallo.
She was on her phone, pacing up and down the showroom floor, and trailing ash from the end of her cigarette onto the grey-speckled 100% wool low-nap carpeting, which had been installed by Luigi Speranza himself in 1983 and meticulously maintained these 4 decades by his son and heir, Giovannino Speranza.
"Yes, I met the girl," she continued. "She's perfect. She'll be the perfect deflection from all this other nonsense, salt of the earth and all of that."
Smilzo and Signor Speranza exchanged tight smiles.
"It's good, Smilzo," Signor Speranza said, even though his heart wasn't in it. "It's good for Antonella. We should be happy for her."
"Yeah, boss," whispered Smilzo. "He's good."
His eyes drifted miserably again to where Antonella stood, 100 centimeters from the man of her dreams.
"Trust me. Look, I'll send you a picture."
Signora Gallo stopped pacing for a moment and pointed her phone at Antonella, who was unaware she was being photographed.
"Did you get it?"
Signora Gallo waited and then started to laugh.
"I know."
Her laugh expanded to a cackle.
Signor Speranza and Smilzo froze.
Signor Speranza could see out of the corner of his eye that Smilzo's ear was bright pink and that his chin was trembling, but he could not turn and look at him. It was too horrible. Suddenly time and space fell away, and he was standing outside the hotel on the day Carlotta came home from the hospital.
"Luca, come on now," he was saying, trying to sound sure and assertive. "You are a nice boy. I know your mother. You have to give this new life a chance. Gemma needs you. The baby needs you."
On his left, he saw the living room curtain twitch and knew that his daughter was watching.
"Don't you love Gemma?"
he had asked then, his voice high and tight. And that was the moment that was burned in his memory forever, the moment that still woke him up sometimes in the middle of the night. Luca Ricci, that stupid, conceited boy, had tipped his head back just like Signora Gallo and laughed. Now at the shop, Signor Speranza felt a sudden urge to leap up from his chair and turn his desk over and shout at everyone to get out, just get the hell out. But the same thing happened now as it happened all those years ago. In the face of something awful, something he couldn't even understand, he opened his mouth and words failed him.
"Boss," said Smilzo hoarsely. He had stood up and was trying to slide through the crack between the chairs and the desk. He fumbled and tripped and caught himself.
"I have to go home now, boss."
Don Rocco's fork hovered over his tomato salad.
"Is something bothering you, signore?"
Said Signor Speranza. They were at their usual table at the cafe. Signor Speranza hadn't touched his food. Signora Catuzza had just watered the olive tree, and the ground next to them was still steaming. The air tasted like chicken soup.
"It just seems as if something is wrong," said the priest, frowning.
Signor Speranza sighed. It had been a long, demoralizing week. Their film, the film they had been making all summer, was effectively gone. Every scene that had formerly featured Smilzo had been reshot with Dante Rinaldi in his place, except one.
"They are cutting the set piece, boss," a morose Smilzo reported. "They say they cannot get the goat to cooperate."
This was indeed true. Signor Speranza had himself witnessed Angelo, Signora Gallo's fancy cinematographer, being pursued down the main street, and without Smilzo to rescue him, either.
Can't they use our footage? If your face is not showing...
Smilzo's cheeks turned pink.
They said the goat would make a more believable stunt double for Dante than I would.
Antonella was miserable also.
Ciao, signorina.
Signor Speranza had called the last time she arrived on set. Antonella had jumped as skittish as a colt.
Fine, signore,
she had said, crossing her arms and blinking, her eyes overbright.
I'm fine.
Then there was the business. Signora Gallo and her crew had taken it over completely, almost to the point of wiping it out of existence. On one occasion, Signor Speranza had been whispering into the office telephone, attempting to remotely diagnose Signor Beezy's wet-dry shop vac, when Signora Gallo had actually ended the call with one long-nailed finger.
"Where do you think you are, signore?"
she had scolded with a simpering smile. Of course, quite a lot was also going right. The film was undeniably shaping up and starting to look like a real, actual film, which their version never had. Thanks to the crew and Dante's collection of hangers-on, the hotel was fully booked for the first time in years, without even having to count flatulent Pomeranians. And then there was the matter of the pipes. The safe at Speranza and Sons was still short of the 70,000 euros they needed to pay off the Water Commission, but even that situation was looking up. Signora Catuzza, whose business was thriving, had made a large payment on her back taxes, and yesterday Signora Gallo had taken a photo of Dante and Antonella standing cheek to cheek, Dante grinning lazily with his allegedly capped teeth, and Antonella wearing a wobbly smile. She had posted it to Dante's official social media account, and ticket sales of the premiere had gone through the roof. In fact, they were now overbooked by at least 200 people, but Signor Speranza wasn't worried about that. Such was the beauty of an outdoor cinema, the spillover could just sit on the grass. By the time all was said and done, there would be more than enough money to cover Prometto's debt. He should have been elated, but he felt strangely flat.
"I hear there are going to be a lot of people,"
Don Rocco coaxed as if reading his friend's mind. He speared a chunk of tomato.
"Is it the parking you are worried about?"
Signor Speranza waved an airy hand.
"No, father. You know St. Francis Cabrini handles all my parking issues."
Don Rocco made a coughing sound and took a sip of water, and it was a testament to their friendship and the gravity of the current situation that he did not object to the notion that the patron saint of parking spaces might be free to act as Prometto's own personal parking attendant for the weekend.
"Are there going to be reporters, do you think?"
he asked instead. Signor Speranza sighed again and shrugged.
"I don't know, father. Maybe you should ask that Signora Gallo. She'll know, probably."
Don Rocco was silent for a long time. He wiped his mouth with his napkin and then folded it on his lap.
"You never asked me, signore," he said quietly, "why I gave you that money, 1,300 euros, even though I knew you were lying to me."
The feeling of listlessness cleared from Signor Speranza's head, and he sat up straight. No, he hadn't asked. It hadn't even occurred to him to wonder. He had just been glad to get it at the time, and then there had been so many other things swirling around in his head that any curiosity he might otherwise have had had been pushed out of the way.
"I gave you that money, signore," continued Don Rocco evenly, "because I know how much you love this town. And I knew that if you needed money for something, it was for a good reason."
Signor Speranza found that he was nodding.
"And then I saw my friends and my neighbors,"
said Don Rocco, gesturing to either side.
"It was as if they had awakened suddenly, after being asleep for a long time. The old ladies who come to the church, Zio Franco, Antonella, your Smilzo over there, Ernesto Maestro singing. Singing with the voice God gave him. And I thought, this is a good thing here."
Signor Speranza felt a lump coming into his throat.
A good thing. Yes.
Don Rocco glanced across the way at Speranza and Sons, where the front window was blotted out by a folding screen, and his expression darkened.
"Now these new people have come," he said, frowning. and it's as if everyone has gone to sleep again.
Signor Speranza narrowed his eyes. He felt the wheels turning in his brain.
"What is it that you think I should do, Father?" he asked slowly.
Don Rocco shrugged.
"I am just saying, no one can be here forever. And that is why it matters what you choose to do if God gives you the chance."
The priest looked right at Signor Speranza.
"Don't you think so, Signore?"
Signor Speranza lingered at the table after Don Rocco left. It was one of those glorious afternoons in late summer, when the sky was blue, 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 and the heaped white clouds were cut in sharp relief against it, and if one closed one's eyes, it smelled of fried oil and suntan lotion, and overripe bergamots heavy on their branches, and the sound of the children playing was like the chatter of birds. All these things together gave Signor Speranza a strange and fleeting feeling in his chest, a sure feeling that he might not only live forever, but also that he had been alive for a long, long time. It was a day like that. How could it be possible, then, he thought with a frown, that it felt as if he was on the brink of losing everything that mattered?
"Papa?"
Signor Speranza looked up, Gemma. He had been so busy he had not seen her since the day the fake Dante had first shown his cardboard face, even though she and Carlotta had returned to the hotel last night.
"What are you doing here, Papa?" she said. "You have no work to do. Or you are letting Mama do it all for you?"
Signor Speranza heard the teasing note in her voice and smiled. Gemma pulled out a chair and sat down next to him.
"I heard they changed everything you and Smilzo did."
She tipped her head towards the battened windows of Speranza and Sons and flashed a look of sympathy.
"Ernesto told me."
Signor Speranza put up his hands.
"Well, what can I do?"
"What can you do, Papa?"
Gemma grinned, and for a second she looked just like Carlotta.
"Probably anything you want to do."
The statement startled Signor Speranza, and he found he had nothing to say. In a fraction of a moment, all his thoughts dried up. But Gemma didn't seem to mind. He snuck sidelong glances at her, and she just sat there, serene, and looking at the sky. He looked at the sky, too. After a little while, a voice drifted from a nearby table.
"Babbo?"
Signor Speranza looked over. It was a little boy he had never seen before, talking to his father.
"Babbo," the child said again, "this is my ice cream shop. What do you want to order?"
He stood solemnly alongside his father, holding an imaginary pencil and pad. Signor Speranza and Gemma exchanged glances.
"Remember," he wanted to say, "remember how we used to play restaurant."
The words didn't come, but still he could tell she was thinking the same thing. They looked back at the father, who was eager and young, almost a boy himself, and leaning forward on the table.
"All right," he said. "I'll have a cone with one scoop of purple unicorn, two scoops of polka dots, and three scoops of singing kangaroo."
He looked at his son and then around at the other tables, clearly charmed by his own vast powers of imagination, and bursting with expectancy. The little boy frowned.
"I have chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry," he said.
It was Gemma who laughed first, a warbled, almost hysterical whoop, and then Signor Speranza joined in. They laughed so much and so loudly that some of the other tables laughed too, and the young father looked up, surprised and sheepish. Signor Speranza scattered bills on the table to cover his and Don Rocco's bill, and he and Gemma stood to go.
"Enjoy him,"
he called to the bewildered young father as they left.
"Enjoy your son."
And that was it. Signor Speranza knew what he was going to do now. He was going to buy an enormous bag of roasted chestnuts from the Emporio, and he and Gemma were going to split it on the walk home and hide the wrapper from Betta, as they'd used to so long ago. Then he was going to play with Carlotta and that dratted puppy, and there wasn't anything Signor Gallo or the Water Commission or anybody else could do about it. As for the rest of it, well, he was just going to have to think of something.